What's up, y'all? Kelly Clarkson with Wayfair. My favorite thing about the holidays? Decking out my whole house. It's not a competition, but if it was, well, I'd win the season with Wayfair. Outdoor inflatable Santa? Got it on Wayfair. Trees, lights, and ornaments? Wayfair. Hosting must-haves like dining sets, beds, sheets, and towels? Wayfair. For everything in your style delivered with fast and free shipping, visit Wayfair.com or the Wayfair app to win the season. But again, it's not a competition.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Hello, listeners. A quick message before we dive into this story. This episode was among my first, which means I was still learning the ropes and finding my way as a storyteller. My most recent episodes sound much better. So if you are a first-time listener, please bear with these early episodes and just know it gets better. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen, and please check out those more recent episodes too. Hello, listeners. Welcome to Stars of the Golden Age, a show that highlights the lives of legends from film, music, and the birth of television during Hollywood's Golden Age and the few years surrounding it. I am your host, Erin Carlson. Today, we will be discussing another very important woman in Hollywood history, actress, writer, and director, Ida Lupino. My voice is a little raspy today, so I apologize if I sound a little different, but I'm going to do my very best. Ida Lupino was born in London under active German attack on February 4, 1918, to parents Stanley and Connie Lupino. Not only had German Gothas just sent a fury of bombs down on the city days before, but Connie Lupino's birth experience of the couple's first child was not an easy one. Neither mother nor baby were expected to survive. But they did. Both of them. What an entrance into the world. Stanley Lupino was a very well-known comedic entertainer in London, known for his work in musical comedies. The Lupino family legacy was entertaining. Generations of Lupinos had been entertainers. It was in their blood. But when Stanley held his little girl for the first time, he knew with one look at her that she would be the most famous Lupino of all. The Lupino family originated in Italy, and their theatrical background dates to the early 1600s, with Stanley's several times over great-grandfather starting it all by performing as a puppeteer. And ever since then, every single male Lupino has been an entertainer. Connie Lupino came from a theatrical background too. In fact, she was once billed as, quote, the fastest tap dancer alive. So entertainment was really in little Ida's blood. Stanley was candid with Ida on his wishes for a son while Connie was pregnant with her. He wanted a male entertainment heir. But he also added that he loved Ida more than he ever could have imagined, and he knew she would achieve greatness. It didn't matter that she was a female. And he knew she would go beyond entertaining. He knew his daughter would someday write, direct, and produce. He just knew she was something special. Ida had a very close and very special bond with her father. She was Daddy's little girl. According to Ida, she and her father shared a psychic connection. She said she could write something on a piece of paper, crumple it up, put it in front of him, and he could write on a different piece of paper exactly what she had written. And she could do the same from him. Ida later recalled that both she and her father could occasionally have clairvoyant thoughts and had eerie intuition. There was a lot of laughter in the Lupino home. But all emotions were encouraged to be expressed. Excitement, happiness, joy, but also anger and sadness. Nothing was held back in the Lupino household. Ida became a big sister in 1921 when she was 3 years old, when little sister Rita was born. The girls had a nanny, but much of their care outside of their parents was given by their grandparents, Connie's mother and Stanley's father. Ida loved the backstage stories from her cranky old grandpa, and she was heartbroken when he passed away. Stanley Lupino was the most famous comedian in England by the time Ida was 10 years old, and the family was able to move into a beautiful mansion in London on a large plot with gardens and a sprawling lawn. The book I used as my primary source, Ida Lupino by William Donati, pleased me by sharing some fine details of the Lupino mansion. It was an, quote, ancient red brick Tudor dwelling situated on a vast estate with colorful gardens and rolling lawns, end quote. And it had, quote, high ceilings, stained glass windows, and dark crannies that fired Ida's imaginative mind, end quote. Ida's imaginative mind was reinforced by the fact that the Lupino family was very spiritual and believed their home was haunted. Young Ida's imagination was so fierce that she was almost constantly in a land of make-believe. She would dress up in her mother's costumes and makeup and perform in front of a large mirror for hours every day. And to take it a step further, she would tear up her clothing, make herself look disheveled, and then go door to door begging for money, telling people she was homeless and hungry. She did this just to see if she could act well enough to convince people that she was really poor. What a little spitfire. I would have loved child Ida. Ida and her little sister Rita grew up very closely with their cousins, and Ida was the girl boss of the group. She would lead them into adventures, sometimes leading them into trouble, but trouble didn't frighten her. The crew loved to make amateur movies, Ida as the scriptwriter and director, of course. One script she wrote required a scene where they would have to pry open a window of a neighbor's house. I'm not sure why they couldn't have used their own house in the scene. Well, a cop showed up while they were doing this, a bunch of kids, remember, and Ida cockily told the officer that they were trying to rob the house. He didn't think that was funny, and he drugged the kids down to the station where Stanley had to come to their rescue. When Ida was 8 years old and her sister Rita was 5, their parents enrolled them in boarding school in Brighton, about 50 miles or 80 kilometers away from their family home. The move was made to prepare the girls for a life on stage and to prepare their voices for singing, but it was incredibly difficult for both girls and their parents. Stanley and Connie were heartbroken to part with their daughters, and the girls definitely did not want to stay at the boarding school. But Stanley said they were Lupinos, and they had to prepare for their destiny of entertaining others. The girls were there for 2 years. The girls returned having gained a ton of knowledge and skill. When Stanley asked then 10-year-old Ida and 7-year-old Rita what they wanted for Christmas that year, they said they wanted a real theater in their home. And Stanley, best dad ever, delivered. He built a stage and an audience with seating for 50. And then he wrote a theater review for the children, cousins and all, to perform as a way for his daughters to practice their theatrical skills. They rehearsed daily, and as the stage manager, Stanley even drew up fake contracts for his performers to sign. The ages of the actors ranged from 5 to 13. 36 attendees were invited for the big performance, but word had spread in Stanley's theater circles of the fun little project that he was doing at home, and more than 80 more showed up hoping to catch a glimpse of the action. Plus, some reporters, photographers, and even theater agents. This had turned into quite a big deal. The 36 invited guests were some pretty important people, too. People like Tallulah Bankhead, she was there. The 3-hour show included drama, comedy, dancing, singing, and even acrobatics. At intermission and after the show, the high-profile audience sang the praises of the talented cast of children. After the big review, the stage was regularly used as a home acting school, with Stanley as the teacher. Ida Lupino came from a theater family. They were meant for the stage. Her father had reluctantly been dabbling in films here and there, but his real love was the stage. But there were other members of the famous show business Lupino family who were more dazzled by a life in motion pictures, and Ida really wanted to dip her toes in those waters. Stanley's cousins, Wallace Lupino and Lupino Lane, were popular screen actors already, having made films in both London and Hollywood. Lupino Lane was now directing films as well, and while preparing for the 1931 movie The Love Race, in which he would be directing his brother Wallace and cousin Stanley, 13-year-old Ida begged and pleaded for her father to get her a role as an extra in the film. He really wanted her to go into a life in theater, but how could he say no to his daughter's passionate pleas to perform? Ida Lupino got her way and had her very first film appearance at 13 years old. She even negotiated the family sheepdog, Chuggles, into the deal. Ida just had a little extra part in a crowd scene in The Love Race, but nevertheless, she was hooked. She stubbornly and confidently told her parents that she was dropping out of school and becoming a film actress. Well, although Stanley had been pushing his daughter into a life of show business her entire life, this isn't exactly how he saw it playing out. But she was determined. So Stanley made her an offer. If she could go out and find legitimate roles and show promise of a strong acting career, he would let her quit school. So stubborn and determined, 13-year-old Ida secured herself an agent and found herself a small part in a movie really quickly. But she was dropped when the director was worried that her beauty would overshadow the star in the film. And that happened again and again. But Ida knew she could act, so she just worked hard to show directors that she had true talent behind her pretty face. Still, she was ready to build on her skill to become the best she could be. With that, Ida Lupino decided to return to school. Not her regular school, no, no. The esteemed Royal Academy of Dramatic Arts. Ida was accepted into RADA in January of 1932, just shy of her 14th birthday. Later that year, Ida was handpicked from a stage performance at RADA for a movie called Her First Affair. At 14 years old, she was playing a teenage girl who tries to engage in a forbidden romance with a married author of romance novels. Quite the entrance into movies. The movie was a success in England, so it was also released in the US where it was also well received. Ida Lupino was particularly well received, and she began receiving offers from Hollywood. But she was so young, and she didn't really want to leave England. Not yet, at least. And she certainly wanted to continue honing in her acting skills before she took on Hollywood. So she stayed in London and took on more British films, including one with matinee idol Ivor Novello, who, fun fact, was Ida Lupino's godfather. He and Stanley were great friends dating back to their early theater days. So the fact that Ivor Novello was Ida's godfather makes it all the more creepy when in the film I Lived For You, the two of them shared a somewhat intimate scene. Kiss and all. By August of 1933, Ida finally felt ready to take on Hollywood. So she and her mother Connie boarded a ship headed for the US, while Stanley and Rita had stayed behind. By this time, all four of the Stanley Lupino family had embraced films and were appearing in movies. A true show business family, but sometimes show business families have to be separated for periods of time. Paramount had already offered Ida a contract, so they were there waiting for her and Connie with royal treatment. They were put up in a big, beautiful colonial home in LA. They shared the address in the book I used for my research, so I of course had to look it up. It's a beautiful brick 4,300 square foot colonial with 4 bedrooms and 3 bathrooms, and the current estimate is $2.9 million, so not too shabby. Ida was immediately put to work on the Paramount lot, doing photo shoots, screen tests, and wardrobe and makeup tests. And once her image was all decided, she quickly started making films. The image that Paramount had chosen for her was their version of Jean Harlow. They bleached her brown hair blonde, adorned her in extremely heavy makeup, and of course, made her slim down her figure. She was told she was plump at 5'4" and 127 pounds, and was instructed to slim down to 102 pounds. Listen, I'm 5'4" and I can tell you 127 pounds is not plump. But it was in 1930s Hollywood. Ida had a unique personality. She was often a roller coaster of energy, what many people would call eccentric. She was bold and blunt, something that was frowned upon. She wasn't afraid to tell people exactly what she thought. Her nickname became Loopy, not only because of her last name. She was unique, and uniqueness wasn't as cool as it is today. cookie cutter women were cool. Less than a year after arriving in LA, Ida contracted polio. She went to bed totally fine one night, and then she awoke in the night, quote, bathed in sweat with a thumping head, sore limbs, and a fever. Her right arm stuck out at an angle to her body, and her right hand was balled into a fist. The soles of her feet felt as though they were on fire. She tried to stand up, but slumped to the floor, end quote. Ida Lupino was told she may never walk again, but she miraculously recovered. Ida's contract was up at the end of 1937. She hadn't been impressed with the films Paramount had been putting her in, or the bold blonde image that they had molded for her, so she opted out of the renewal and gave up her $1,750 per week paycheck in hopes of finding the opportunities to act in richer roles. She wanted to be a serious actress, not just appear in a series of mediocre parts as a blonde beauty. She would remold her image and try to create the career she wanted for herself. She was just 19 years old at this point. Oh, and you know I love to adjust for inflation. So that $1,750 in 1937 that she was making per week at Paramount would be over $38,000 per week today. She really wanted to prove herself as an actress to give up that guaranteed weekly paycheck. She secured a two-picture contract with Columbia, but only two because studio head Harry Cohn told her she wasn't pretty enough for stardom. Harry Cohn was a huge jerk. He's also the guy who told Jean Arthur she looked like a horse. And my bonus episode this month will tell you a lot more about him, and it's not good. Ida had also fallen deeply in love with an actor named Lewis Hayward. They couldn't stand each other when they first met, but then one day it clicked and the frustration turned into infatuation. 20-year-old Ida Lupino married 29-year-old Lewis Hayward on November 17, 1938. They went back to work the very next day. Soon after the wedding, they bought a beautiful 5-bedroom home in Brentwood. Because Ida's family loved to entertain, so Ida needed a home fit for entertaining now that she was moving away from her mother. Connie stayed in LA, and now little sister Rita had also arrived in town. I looked up Ida and Lewis's home on Zillow, and it was built in 1937, so it was pretty much brand new when Ida and Lewis made it their home. It's a beautiful house. I would totally live there. I'm not so sure I would have lived there with Lewis's idea of decorating, though. As described in the book I used, quote, beneath the high-beamed ceiling was an unusual chandelier made of two crossed rifles. Along the rustic pine walls, Lewis's collection of antique firearms was displayed. Over the fireplace were his antique German beer steins and mugs, shaped like gargoyle heads, end quote. That was the description of the den, and the dining room was described as resembling an English pub. It sounds like Ida had decorating control over the living room at least, thank God. It did say she collected porcelain cats and dogs, so those were everywhere. They also had separate bedrooms, so she kept hers decorated in feminine pastels and satins. I can only imagine what Lewis's bedroom looked like. Although Ida and Lewis's home was a new build, Ida was convinced that it was haunted and that they lived among spirits. Lewis told her that it was built on indigenous burial grounds. They allegedly had instances of things randomly flying across the room, strange noises, and guests falling terribly ill while visiting. Ida was a very spiritual woman, so she embraced this and wasn't afraid at all. Some of these guests, though, they were definitely not fans of these invisible roommates at the Hayward home. Happy and fulfilled in her personal life, Ida was still struggling with her stagnant career. She was given one mediocre film after the other, and all she wanted to do was showcase her talents in deeper roles. She was a Lupino, after all. She was so worried that her inability to become a great Hollywood actress would disappoint her father. And then, in 1939, after 6 years in Hollywood, Ida's luck would change. She finally got the kind of role she yearned for in The Adventures of Sherlock Holmes and The Light That Failed. Critics and audiences were finally noticing her. This was the launching point of her career as a highly respected film actress, and she was suddenly the talk of the town. Within a year, she was proclaimed Hollywood's hottest star and was making $106,000 per year, which would be about $2.3 million today. Her hard work and determination had paid off. With her career finally off and running, there was turmoil behind the scenes. World War II was underway in Europe, and Ida's father, Stanley, was in great danger. He was volunteering tirelessly as an air raids precautionary warden in London. His responsibilities were escorting Londoners to safety from Nazi air raids and even extinguishing incendiary bombs and locating time bombs that could explode at any moment. It was terribly dangerous, and Ida was sick with worry about her father's safety and the safety of everyone back home. Both she and her mother exchanged letters with Stanley, and in one he wrote, quote, "The Germans are trying all the devilment that hell can supply," end quote. Sadly, the Lupino family home had been destroyed by German bombs. On the home front in Brentwood, Ida's marriage was great, except for the fact that Louis was pretty jealous and resentful of her career when his was nowhere near as successful as hers. He had never wanted to be Mr. Ida Lupino, and here he was. Ida did her best to make Louis the king of the home, since she was Hollywood royalty outside of their home. They were the best of friends. Things were good. Always an individual of complex emotions, the fame had piled on some new triggers for Ida. She couldn't leave the house without a mob of fans and photographers in her face, and she even had a couple of unbalanced fans who overstepped their boundaries, including her car being stolen by a fan, her front door being stolen for a souvenir, and a home break-in on a different occasion. She had achieved the role she had strived for, but she wasn't so sure about the fame that came with those roles. She was in it for the art, not the fame. Quoting from the book Ida Lupino by William Donati, quote, "Emotionally, Ida was a jumble of contradictions, infused with the polarity often present in intensely creative individuals. On one hand, she wished to be regarded as down-to-earth, just plain Ida, the good wife. But she also wished to startle, to shock, and to dominate. Her inconsistency was a personality trait that her intimate circle came to accept. As fame threatened to overwhelm her, she retreated, secluding herself at the Westridge home. The Haywards shied away from nightclubs and preferred to entertain on their own turf. Ida veered away from starchy Hollywood circles. She viewed formal parties as dull and preferred to romp with her terrier Rowdy. She was accompanied everywhere by a German shepherd named Duchess, a beloved pet that slept protectively at the foot of her bed," end quote. Ida was also known for her quick temper on set. Well, in life, really. Remember, she grew up in a family environment where expressing emotions instead of suppressing them was encouraged. Whatever she felt, she let it be known. And she was a very emotional woman, in all ways. She was high-strung and unpredictable, and she would get so worked up that she would go without sleep for days. She said herself, quote, "I have my mad moments. There is a little black devil inside of me. Sometimes I must fight that devil. It's a terrible fight. Someday I'm going to lose. It will be very bad for all of us. I have moods, lots of moods, and some of them are very dark," end quote. Louis supported his wife through her dark periods the best he could, but he also lived with some demons. Columnist Hedda Hopper, who was never afraid to say exactly what she felt about someone, wrote that Louis was, quote, "introspective, moody, and filled with psychological problems," end quote. So, needless to say, there were many heated fights between Ida and Louis. But through their ups and downs, they truly loved each other. The dangers in London where Ida's father was did not help her anxieties and emotions, as well as the looming fear that the U.S. would soon be entering the war as well. On December 6, 1941, Louis Hayward became a U.S. citizen. The very next day, December 7, 1941, Japan bombed Pearl Harbor, marking the entrance of the United States into World War II. Ida immediately joined the Women's Ambulance and Defense Corps and became trained as a nurse. Throughout the war, she assisted the Red Cross, the USO, as well as British war effort groups. And Louis, having been a U.S. citizen for one day before his new home country went to World War, enlisted in the U.S. Marine Corps and was sent off to serve the country. To add to all of the stress and uncertainty, Stanley had been diagnosed with cancer. He initially told only Ida of his illness. Not even his estranged wife knew until it became apparent he likely wouldn't recover. Connie was still living in the U.S., so it was easy for him to conceal from her. Stanley had actually been seeing a woman back in England for quite some time, a young actress named Sally Gray, who was only 2 years older than his daughter Ida. Stanley acted as long as he could through his declining health. Performing was in his blood, and he couldn't bear the thought of leaving the stage. Ultimately, though, it became too difficult to do. Stanley Lupino lost his battle with cancer on June 10, 1942. He was only 48 years old. Stanley's death hit England hard. He was the country's most famous comedic stage actor at the time of his death. But it was nothing compared to the devastation that Ida was experiencing. She and her father had had such a deep connection, and now he was gone. She was inconsolable for months. And then she began feeling his presence and knew her father was near her and guiding her. Ida's desire to forever make her father proud, whether it be in life or death, sparked some new dreams. She began writing both screenplays and songs. But more importantly, 24-year-old Ida Lupino wanted to be a director. And she knew she could do it. Louis returned home from the war around Christmas of 1943, and Ida was so excited to welcome her husband home and abandon the worry she lived with every day of his absence. But it wasn't her husband who returned to her. Louis had experienced horror in the war, and he watched many of his friends die before his eyes. He was a changed man. He was hardened, angry, and simply not mentally well after his experiences in the war. Ida tried everything she could to support her husband, and she hoped patience would return the man she loved back to her. She wanted to help heal him. She was taken by complete shock when, after just a few months of being home, Louis announced to Ida that he was leaving. He wanted a new life, a life without her in it. He needed a fresh start. He moved out, and Ida fell into terrible mental despair, which kept her bedridden for weeks. Louis also collapsed from mental anguish, and he had to be hospitalized. It was really sad. Just imagine how many lives are affected by the horrors of war long after the battles have settled. Once through the shock and devastation of the separation, and in the process of healing emotionally, Ida began dating again. She was looking for a strong and passionate man, someone similar to her own complex energy and personality. And she found that man in Austrian actor Helmut Dantin, who coincidentally had a short but very powerful supporting role in our movie of the month this month, 1942's Mrs. Miniver. He also had a supporting role in Casablanca that same year. It was late summer or fall of 1944 when he and Ida began seeing each other. And boy, did Ida find a passionate man. Unfortunately, that passion was usually shown in frightening ways. He was demeaning and confrontational, and the arguments between he and Ida could get really, really heated. On New Year's Eve 1944, after a month-long separation after a particularly nasty fight, Dantin broke into Ida's home at 3 a.m. while she and her three female houseguests were asleep. He was extremely intoxicated. Ida's houseguests were awoken by the commotion, but Ida had taken a heavy dose of sleeping pills and slept through it all. As the three women pleaded for Dantin to leave, he forced them into a corner and began physically assaulting them. After biting one of the women's arms, he fell to the floor and passed out. Unfortunately, not for long. As the women were trying helplessly to wake up Ida, Dantin stumbled into her room and began hitting a sleeping Ida. She was so zonked out that a hard hit to the face didn't even wake her. The police arrived and Helmut Dantin was swiftly arrested and charged with battery. This wasn't his first run-in with the law either. The guy was not a great choice of partner. When he was released on bail just hours after his arrest, he made this statement. Quote, "It was all a terrible mistake. I am going back to Ida's house just as soon as I get washed up and into clothes to straighten the whole thing out." End quote. The women were horrified to see Dantin at the door the morning after the drunken assault. But Ida had zero memory of the traumatic event because she slept through it all. Even the assault on her. She really must have taken a few too many sleeping pills. Helmut made light of the incident, blaming it on a little too much New Year's celebration. And that excuse was good enough for Ida. She told the press, quote, "He's full of enthusiasm, which I like because, as you know, that's the way I am. He's very sensitive, which I also like. Helmut is the only man, except for Lewis, of course, of whom I have been really fond of in more than 10 years, end quote. Oh, come on, Ida Lupino, you could have pretty much any man in the world. Run, run, run. Well, she didn't run. Not right away, at least. Eventually, the dangerous fights weren't worth it anymore. Ida didn't want to be single, but that was no way to live. When the bad passion began to outweigh the good passion, it was time to call it quits after a couple of years. Ida had a short fling with friend and co-star Errol Flynn next in 1947, but thankfully she realized he wasn't the best relationship material either. Ida and Lewis's divorce had become final in May of 1946, and Lewis immediately remarried that same month. Ida was definitely living the pages of this new chapter in her life. She had moved into a new home and was entertaining heavier than ever. In fact, her new home had a revolving door and was constantly filled with people. There were at least a dozen people, often stars, occupying her living room at any given time, day or night. Clark Gable, David Niven, Errol Flynn, Bing Crosby, all kinds of dashing party animals. Ida suffered from terrible insomnia and she didn't keep a regular sleep schedule. Sometimes her bedtime was 3 a.m. and sometimes it was 3 p.m. She even occasionally hosted pre-dawn cocktail parties at 4 o'clock in the morning. Way to kick off a good day of day drinking. This was quite a lifestyle, but what she really wanted was a family. She wanted a husband and she desperately wanted children. And at 29 years old, the 1947 clock was ticking. And then she ran into an old acquaintance at a party, a man named Collier Young, Collie to his friends. And sparks were flying everywhere. Collie was an executive assistant to Harry Cohn. Yikes, I bet that was fun. What he really wanted to do, however, was write scripts and produce films. Collie Young was a much, much better companion than Helmut Dantin or Errol Flynn. He was cool and sophisticated, a much calmer man to spend time with. In June of 1948, Ida Lupino became a United States citizen, and 2 months later, she married Collier Young. The newlyweds purchased a home together and undertook a huge renovation project on it. My favorite part was one of the final touches they gave to their home. A big sign that read, "Visitors, don't drop in. Please call first." My dream, but I don't have the balls. This was a fresh new beginning in Ida's life, and the excitement of it all charged her with the energy to finally do what she had been dreaming of since she lost her father, directing. She hadn't pushed her dreams aside in those past years. What she was really doing was meticulously studying every aspect of filmmaking on the sets of each of her films. This was all part of her plan. And now, partnered up with her new husband who had aspirations to write and produce, they were ready to bust out as a successful power couple in Hollywood. Ida was smart. She was going to make sure her directorial debut was a showstopper. She read dozens of scripts looking for the perfect story to bring to life on the big screen, and she finally found it. Collie brought the project to his boss, Columbia head Harry Cohn, certain he would back them. But Harry Cohn was not a very nice man, and he said no to his dutiful assistant who had basically lived for him. Collie had had it with his tyrant of a boss, and this was the final straw. He quit. Annoyed with the power control at the big studios, they set their sights on a smaller fledgling studio for their project, Emerald Productions. The project was a go, and Ida put every ounce of her time and energy into the creative process of making it a smash success. This was for her father. One thing that was really important to Ida was discovering great young talent that were going unnoticed by the big studios. She wanted to find talented actors and actresses, give them great roles, and help mold them into accomplished stars. Something she had wished she had when she arrived in Hollywood. The perfect protege arrived to audition for the project. Her name was Sally Forrest, a young dancer. Ida gave her her Hollywood break, and Sally went on to star in three of Ida's films. Ida also hired struggling actors who were about ready to throw in the towel on the entire Hollywood dream. She hired actors who tanked their auditions because she could see they were really just nervous. She wanted to give people a chance when most other studios would send them packing within 10 seconds. And she also cast her little sister Rita in a small role in this first film, too. The story, which would be called Not Wanted, was about a young unwed mother, which was a very risque topic for 1949. In fact, the script had to be changed quite a bit to appease production code rules and investors. For instance, they were told not to use the word pregnant. One scene called for the white lead character to share a room in a home for pregnant girls with black, Hispanic, and Asian girls. But a major investor threatened to back out if that was shown on screen. Ida fought hard to keep it because she herself had visited some of these boarding homes. And the reality was that girls of all races lived together. It was really important for her to portray stories in a very realistic way and to not fall into racial prejudices. But the investor stood strong. Take out the other races or no money. Ida had no choice but to cave. But she vowed at that moment to one day be able to not be obligated to men with harsh demands. She did sneak in one beautiful Asian girl into a scene, and when the investor saw it, he was irate. But Ida didn't care. Ida didn't take directing credit for this first film, only producer credit. But she was indeed the director of the movie. Not Wanted cost only $153,000 to make, mostly thanks to Ida Lupino's creativity in cutting costs. And within 6 months, it had grossed $1 million. Ida Lupino had done it. She was now a director. Better yet, she, Colley, and writer Melvin Wald formed their own production company called Filmmakers. Their mission was to share deep, realistic stories to the world. Colley explained it to Hedda Hopper like this, quote, "We're working on the theory that the ticket-buying public is more interested in what's in a picture than who's in it," end quote. Their first solo project was a movie called Never Fear, a drama about a young dancer who contracts polio, a subject near and dear to Ida's heart since she herself had a frightening battle against the disease. The country was once again in the midst of a polio epidemic with about 7,500 cases reported at the time they were filming. Ida wanted to make a film centered around hope. They were warned by several people that a movie about polio in the middle of an active polio epidemic was not a good idea. Investors didn't want to back it, and theater owners warned they would not show it. It's like having a movie about COVID come out in the depths of the COVID pandemic when we all just wanted to bury ourselves in distractions from the pandemic, not be faced with the realities of it in our entertainment. But Ida was passionate about the movie, so she and Colley put most of their own money into it, plus Ida took on a film role to star in at another studio for some extra funds for the project. It was a big risk, but a risk they were willing to take. And they lost. Just as everyone had warned, it was a flop. They were out of money. Then came Howard Hughes to the rescue. He had recently bought RKO Pictures and offered to take Filmmakers under the RKO wing as an independent company. He would offer financial backing, a studio lot, and distribution for a portion of the film's earnings. And he verbally promised them creative control. Verbally. Colley convinced Ida and Melvin that he could meet with Hughes and sign the deal himself. But he failed to read the fine print. And Howard Hughes made sure there was a lot of it. He had taken them for a ride. Colley signed the contract, and now RKO owned them and all of their creative work. and Howard Hughes would have total control over the financial earnings of filmmakers. Colley had destroyed their company with one signature. Ida was pissed. Being business partners may work for some couples, but it wasn't going too great for Ida and Colley. And this huge mistake surely didn't help things. They were both strong-willed with their ideas, and they clashed a lot. Since they had been investing every ounce of themselves and all of their time into the company, it had taken a serious toll on the marriage. Ida falling in love with her co-star Howard Duff on that film she did to make a little dough didn't help things either. Ida and Colley separated but continued to work together. They were kind of stuck as business partners. That biological clock was still ticking away and Ida still didn't have a baby. Well, her wish would come true sooner than she dreamed, because before she was even divorced, she was pregnant with Howard Duff's baby. He hadn't really wanted to get married, but he did love Ida, and he wanted to do the right thing for his future family. So, Howard and Ida got married. Ida and Collier Young's divorce was final on October 20th, 1951, and the very next day, she married Howard Duff. Ida was 33 years old and embarking on another new exciting chapter in her life. This one was the most important because she would welcome her baby into her life. Little Bridget Mirella Duff was born premature on April 23, 1952. She weighed only 4 pounds when she was born, and Ida and Howard were told that there was only a 50% chance that she would survive. Well, Bridget was a Lupino, so she pulled through. And in a surprising twist, her godparents were chosen as Ida's barely ex-husband, Collier Young, and his new wife, Joan Fontaine. Colley and Joan and Ida and Howard were actually very good friends. Good for them. In fact, Ida and Colley's 1953 filmmaker movie, The Bigamist, starred Ida and Joan Fontaine. They tried to get Ida's ex-husband, Lewis Howard, to step in for a small part, but he declined. It was all a little too weird for him. With The Bigamist, Ida Lupino became the first woman to direct herself in a major motion picture. Filmmaker's first film released under RKO ownership was titled Outraged, and it was an emotionally gripping film about a young victim of rape. Again, a sensitive subject to portray on screen in those days. But Ida Lupino always replayed words in her head said to her by famed Italian director Roberto Rossellini. He said to her, quote, "In Hollywood movies, the star is going crazy or drinks too much or he wants to kill his wife. When are you going to make pictures about ordinary people in ordinary situations?" End quote. She took this a step further and wanted to tell stories of ordinary people in extraordinary situations. Situations that society deemed too delicate to speak about. She wanted people in those difficult situations to have their stories told. They could have a voice through her art. Unfortunately, the world wasn't ready to hear about the realities of young women being forced to hide out in homes for unwed mothers because it was so disgraceful to be pregnant and unmarried, even though the father got to live his life without prejudice. Or stories about the millions of women who are the victims of brutal rapes that leave them in emotional turmoil for the rest of their lives. Variety wrote in their review of Outrage, the rape story, quote, "This is one topic, no matter how skillfully handled, which would better have been left unfilmed," end quote. There were some positive opinions of the film, like the review from a Los Angeles Examiner film critic. They said, quote, "With courage and frankness, within the limits of good taste, Outrage points up the serious consequences to society. The story hits home to every family in that such an occurrence might happen anytime to any girl or woman," end quote. Many people just didn't want to hear about that stuff. Out of sight, out of mind. Ida Lupino wasn't giving up, though. She wanted to tell the story she thought deserved to be heard. Howard Hughes made it really difficult for her, though. He said no to a movie about the struggles of Mexican Americans. He said no to a movie about the lifelong consequences that war veterans suffer through. He said no to a movie about the development of the atom bomb. Ida Lupino wanted to tell all of these stories, but Howard Hughes had control over her creative projects, thanks to her ex-husband. Ida Lupino also wanted to make sure there were no racial divides in her films. She paid careful attention to not fall into the same black stereotypes that were shown in most films of the time. For instance, in the film Outrage, there's a scene where suspects stand in a lineup at a police station. She cast a black man to play the police guard. And in a different scene where a shoeshine boy was shown, she cast a white boy to play that part. It was her way of combating racial prejudices. Ida was a very skilled film director. After all, she had been studying the techniques down to the tiniest detail for years. She secured successful and celebrated cinematographer Archie Stout to head camera work on Never Fear. And he looked back on his amazement in her work like this. Quote, Ida has more knowledge of camera angles and lenses than any director I've ever worked with the exception of Victor Fleming. She knows how a woman looks on the screen and what light woman should have, probably better than I do, end quote. He had filmed more than 500 movies, and these were his words about new film director Ida Lupino. Ida was very careful to portray herself as a calm and supportive leader. Yes, she still had outbursts of anger, but she was able to control her emotions while on set. She was a supportive and encouraging director. She had worked under enough tough directors who weren't afraid to scream at actors, and she did not want to be like that. She was stern and demanding, but in a respectful and patient way. Ida Lupino was running a production company, she was directing films, she was telling controversial stories, and she was still acting in films. But it was the early 50s, and television was gaining steam as the new entertainment fascination in the world. Like many others, Ida was hesitant of going anywhere near a television production. But when David Niven, Dick Powell, and Charles Boyer asked her to appear in an episode of their television production company's show, Four Star Playhouse, how could she say no to them? Ida Lupino made her television debut on December 31st, 1953, and she loved it. She returned for 10 episodes before becoming a regular cast member 2 years later. And then, of course, she was directing television shows. Filmmakers folded in 1954. Ida was so proud of her company, as she should have been. But it was just too difficult to keep it alive financially with Howard Hughes controlling everything and spending their earnings on lavish premieres and promotions. Filmmakers produced 12 feature films in its six-year existence. Of those 12 films, Ida Lupino directed 6 of them, she wrote or co-wrote 5 of them, she acted in 3 of them, and she co-produced 1. With filmmakers in the past, Ida returned to acting a little more, and then lots of television directing. Ida and Howard Duff's marriage was not going too great either. He hadn't wanted to get married in the first place, so after a happy honeymoon phase, the cracks started to show in their marriage. And those cracks just kept getting deeper and deeper. They separated and reconciled several times. There were other women, and they even began divorce proceedings a couple of times. But they stayed together for some reason. Ida's mother, Connie, died unexpectedly after a car accident the day after Christmas of 1959. Ida and her mother had been very, very close, and she never quite recovered from the loss of her mother and best friend. The 1950s had been a very successful decade for Ida Lupino, as she directed and acted in numerous successful television endeavors. But the 1960s brought a lot of change to both television and movies. Ida directed her last television show in 1969, an episode of The Bill Cosby Show. Between the folding of her production company in 1956 and the end of the 1960s, Ida had directed on more than 30 television series. Some of the shows Ida Lupino directed episodes for were Bewitched, Gilligan's Island, The Untouchables, The Donna Reed Show, The Twilight Zone, which she also appeared in, Alfred Hitchcock Presents, and The Fugitive. She and Howard even starred in their own sitcom called Mr. Adams and Eve that was created for them by her ex collie, and it ran for 2 seasons. Ida Lupino was nominated for 2 Primetime Emmy Awards for her work on that show. She was in tons of other shows throughout the 60s and 70s, including the Lucy Desi Comedy Hour, Bonanza, Batman, Charlie's Angels, The Mod Squad, Columbo, and various variety shows. Ida and Howard separated for good in the late 60s, but would remain married for several more years. Their daughter Bridget got married at 18 or 19 and left home too. So Ida was alone for the first time. Ever, really. In 1972, 54-year-old Ida returned to the big screen for the first time in 16 years when she played Steve McQueen's mother in Junior Bonner. And she appeared in a couple more movies afterwards. She continued to live a pretty social life throughout much of the 70s and was highly sought after for social events. By the end of the decade, she had preferred to remain in her home much of the time. Kalia Young and Joan Fontaine's marriage had ended in 1961, but Ida had remained close to them both separately. In a tragic and eerie step of fate, Kalia Young was killed in a car accident on Christmas Day, 1980. Almost 21 years to the exact day Ida's mother Connie died in the same manner. Ida finally secured a divorce from Howard Duff in 1984 after years of separation. Ida lived a very quiet life now, but she did still venture out for social lunches every now and then. Most of her time was spent with her household manager, Mary Ann. Ida Lupino was diagnosed with colon cancer in the early 1990s. While undergoing treatment for the cancer, she suffered a stroke. Ida Lupino, an inspiration for women everywhere, died on August 3, 1995, at the age of 77. Now I would like to share some interesting things I learned during my research. Bullet point number one. Ida Lupino was very clever with the low budgets they had to work with on their filmmaker movies. She would reuse sets, use public spaces as much as possible, use her own wardrobe for her and other actresses, and used a lot of product placement to earn money from brands like Coca-Cola, Cadillac, and United Airlines. She even convinced her own doctor to appear in the delivery scene of Not Wanted. Bullet point number two. Ida was a great friend of Thelma Todd. It was the Lupino family who hosted the party in 1935 at the Trocadero in honor of the 29-year-old Thelma Todd that would end up being her last night alive. She died that night in her running car in the garage. There is a lot of suspicion over her death, so I'll go into the details of that when I cover her on the show. Bullet point number three. Ida Lupino detested telephones. She thought they were a disruption of life, and she lived many years without even having one in her home. Man, she would hate today's society. Bullet point number four. Ida Lupino was the recipient of multiple awards for her work, including a New York Critics Best Actress Award for 1943's The Hard Way and several photoplay awards. In conclusion, Ida Lupino grew up with big expectations placed upon her to follow in the Lupino legacy and be a great entertainer. And she did that and so much more. She wrote and she produced and she directed. She owned her own independent production company, a platform that she used to show movie viewers difficult realities of real life, especially for women. Rape, bigamy, teenage pregnancy, mental illness, and disabilities. Martin Scorsese said of her, quote, "As a star, Lupino had no taste for glamour, and the same was true as a director. The story she told in Outrage, Never Fear, Hard, Fast and Beautiful, The Bigamist, and The Hitchhiker were intimate, always set within a precise social milieu. She wanted to do pictures with poor, bewildered people because that's what we are. Her heroines were young women whose middle-class security was shattered by trauma. Unwanted pregnancy, polio, rape, bigamy, parental abuse. There's a sense of pain, panic, and cruelty that colors every frame." End quote. Ida Lupino did not consider herself a feminist. She didn't pursue directing or writing or producing to prove that women could do those things in a male-dominated industry. She did it because she wanted to tell stories and she knew she could do a great job doing it. By looking past gender expectations and confidently entering a world where only men were expected to succeed, she inadvertently did amazing things for feminists everywhere. Even if that wasn't her intention, she was a pioneer for women in filmmaking. Her father had told her when she was a child that he envisioned extraordinary things for her. He knew she would not only act, but she would direct and produce. Ida attributed this to her father's psychic visions. I personally think he saw the energy, strength, determination, and artistic talent in his daughter and knew she was destined for greatness. Ida Lupino had a commitment to keep the centuries-deep Lupino legacy going strong. Not only did she succeed, but she may have been the most remarkable Lupino of all. Thank you, Ida Lupino, for showing a world with such black and white gender roles that women could do a man's job. Thank you for fighting for the stories that you knew needed to be told, and for doing your part in supporting racial equality in your films. I think you'd be proud to see the diversity in TV and film today and the number of amazing women directing those shows and films. It was women like you who helped them get there. And thank you all for listening. This month's bonus episode over on Patreon is all about the icky history of the Hollywood casting couch. So to get access to that, plus all of the past bonus episodes, go to patreon.com/starsofthegoldenagepodcast to join. You'll also find info about our Movie of the Month Club, and this month's movie is the 1942 classic, Mrs. Miniver. Head on over to Patreon to learn more about joining us and all the fun. And please, my weekly plea to rate and review where you listen to your podcasts and share the show with your friends. And if you're interested, give the show a follow on Facebook and Instagram. For this episode, I used a book titled Ida Lupino, A Biography by William Donati. I also used a little information about Ida Lupino's television career from Wikipedia. And of course, I couldn't do any of this without my little sidekick, IMDb.